Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
Hello and welcome. Well, this is World Spirituality on Unity Online Radio Network. And this is not Paul John Roach. This is Wendy Roach. I am here today as the interviewer, finding out just how difficult that job might be and maybe gaining some appreciation for my husband, Paul John Roach, who is the interviewee. And we are doing a 5-week series. This is the fifth of the series, asking Unity ministers about their spiritual lives and the paths that they've been on. And so today we have Paul John Roach, minister of the Fort Worth Unity Church. So welcome.
All right. It's good to be here. On the other side of the table. All right, yeah. So thank you, Wendy. Yeah, you know, it's been a fascinating series. I'm really glad I've done it, and I want to do another one maybe in a little while, you know, pick another 5 Unity ministers and have them chat about their spiritual paths and what they've learned from other traditions, you know, because Unity is so diverse, and it's wonderful to enjoy and appreciate, you know, their backgrounds and what they brought to Unity. I think it enriches Unity itself. So, yeah, it's good.
So why don't you tell us about your background and what church you grew up in and what your religious experiences or spiritual experiences were when you were younger?
Okay. Yeah, I grew up nominally in the Church of England, though my parents weren't really church-going folks, you know, but they often sent me to church. And then they went and walked around the park themselves. But I remember not getting a whole lot out of church when I was a child. I got more spirituality from school than I did from church, because back in the day we had religious assemblies every morning, and we'd sing hymns and a prayer was offered, and we'd hear some scriptures, and we must have heard the Good Samaritan, you know, thousands of times. But I sort of got a love for religion or for spirituality during those times, because I liked to sing the hymns. And the prayers were often done in Welsh as well as English, because I grew up in Wales. And I loved the intonation, the sound of those prayers. And so I have a warm feeling for those spiritual experiences. You know, one thing I did discover, though, and appreciate, was that I always felt like the Gospels and Jesus were happening in my hometown. So I could see the various stories that you'd read in the Bible. I could see them happening, you know, in different parts of Cardiff where I grew up, and that made it very real, you know. And now, of course, in Unity, where we see that it's practical spirituality, it's all about everyday life, I could see that I'd already started that connection. It wasn't something that happened 2,000 years ago. It was something that was happening in the very place I lived, you know, in the ordinary circumstances of my life. And there were parts of the landscape where I thought, oh, that could be Golgotha, you know, that could be the Mount of Olives, or another part in the arcades and busy streets of Cardiff. That could be where, you know, Jesus came on Palm Sunday, or where he threw over the the tables of the temple. So it became very real for me, and I think that's so important, you know, for me certainly, and I know a lot of Unity folks, you know, that it's a way of life. Yeah, it's not just an observance on Sundays. It's not just a set of ethical rules. It's principles to live by, and that excites me.
And I think you're so right about that. When people take it into their heart, spirituality into their hearts, and they can relate to it and unpack a story that happened 2,000 years ago and make it real for them today, which you're so good at, it being a minister, taking stories out of the Bible and from all different readings and unpacking them and making them real in an everyday experience. So that early childhood experience must have set well with you. So tell us a little more about your some of the mystic experiences you had as a child and a teenager.
Yeah, I think I was, you know, that's why I found, you know, the four walls of a church stultifying, because I wanted to be out in nature. I've always been a person that wanted to be out and about in the fields and woods, and most of my spiritual and mystical experiences happened in nature, still do, actually. I've shared in many of my writings about my experience when I was seven. My sister had just died, and I was on the mountain with my dad, a mountain we used to climb a lot, and we were going through the woods, and he was feeding me hazelnuts. And it was the tender gesture of him feeding that hazelnut to me that must have affected me, because I disappeared for a while. I just went into a white space, and I don't know how long it lasted, but it was quite dramatic, and I was not there anymore. But I had this feeling of absolute rightness, you know, divine order, we'd call it today, and I felt I penetrated beyond three-dimensional reality into some place, and really, since then, nothing's been the same. You know, that was definitely a breakthrough moment, a shift in my life, and I always think of it as my first breakthrough moment, but I think it may have happened before, earlier in my life, too. Certainly happened later, but of course, you know, when you go through teenage years, you forget some of that. You get involved with schoolwork, and then you get involved with your love life and girls and all that. And so the mystical is put on the side, though. You know, relationships with women could be mystical as well, because I'm just a dyed-in-the-wool romantic, so I can find my mysticism
that
anywhere.
You are. You know, that closeness of you speaks out there.
You know, I can remember one thing. It was a song called "I'm Alive." I think it was by the Hollies back in the '60s. And there was a viaduct north of Cardiff, and heading towards the mountain I just referenced. And the viaduct went across the valley there. It was very dramatic. And I remember walking on it one time. We're just exploring, and I had this song, "I'm Alive," in my head, and there was something about the song, and something about being on the viaduct looking down, and you know, being a teenager, I was thinking about a girl I liked, and it was, man, I'm alive, and it was that sense of being totally here in the moment, you know, and grateful for the wonder of life. And you know, life is not always like that, you know, there's many chores and difficulties we have to face. I've had a lot of loss in my life, but that moment, that day, I remember now to this day that it was such an amazing sense of release. It was like an epiphany or something, one of those aha moments, and that definitely sustained me. And actually, you know, rock music and music in general, but certainly the lyrics of rock songs and the melodies have always been linked in my mind to my spiritual path. And I'm actually writing a book right now, trying to, on the spiritual significance of certain rock songs. But I think they can jettison us to that higher awareness if we use them correctly. You know, so you can get your inspiration from all directions. I think that's the message I learned.
That might have been one of the reasons that you were attracted to Unity, too, just because the Fillmores got their inspiration from many different paths and not rock songs, but but many different paths. So So you went on in your exploration, though, to do some pretty exciting exploring of the world, and you had the privilege of being in a free time of your life after having an education, a wonderful education, and it might have even been a female that pushed you back over into finding unity and making a trek halfway across the world. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, well, that's true. You know, after college, there's that time where you think, well, what am I supposed to do? You know, I became a teacher for a while, but I wasn't really happy being a high school teacher. And I decided, and I want to go explore the world for a little bit. And initially I was thinking about coming to the States, but that didn't happen till later. Instead, I went the other direction and went down into India and hitchhiked basically from my home all the way down. Arriving in Kathmandu. And I just ended a long-term relationship, a 4.5-year relationship. And so it was time also for something new. And India was just a revelation to me. In fact, that whole trip, you know, was amazing. And I had various experiences along the way, sort of 7 points along the way that opened up various things for me. And I remember being in Iran, and there were days and days of blue cloudless skies. And I grew up in Wales, you know, we might get some blue one day in a month. And so this idea that it was completely blue day after day just blew my mind. There we go. Things like that, open to, wow, there's a whole new world here of things I have never experienced before. And India was a blend of everything. You know, we talked on the show, because you were recently in India with me, we talked on the show about how what an amazing mess and joy that India is, you know, and it confronts you with its grime and its beauty, its spirituality and its earthiness, you know, all at once. And it is a place, though, I think, where the veil between this world and the spiritual world is very narrow, and you could easily slip back and forth. And that was certainly the case. You know, I had some very memorable experiences in nature again, but also in spiritual communities and with drugs. I mean, because, you know, part of that trip was back in the day was about ingesting certain substances. But it wasn't just about that. It was about that whole opening to possibility, I think, is the way I'd put it. You know, again, feeling very much alive, you know, even though you were thousands of miles away from home, you were part of something that was, you knew was right. It was that sense of rightness again.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that you talk about pre-India and post-India, but I think one of the things that you brought back with you that has stayed with you is a great firsthand experience and knowledge of the various religions that have opened you to Hinduism. And it was when the Buddhism and yoga and Ayurveda, you know, was coming to the United States, and so you had a firsthand experience of it, and so you can speak with a commanding knowledge of it when you do speak of it. Of course, you've studied more since then, but having that firsthand experience, I think, is important.
Yeah, and I started delving into it, you know, in the years before I went to India. I read some books on Buddhism, particularly. I was attracted to Buddhism. And of course, spiritual writings, Jack Kerouac, and I loved the book The Dharma Bums, which again is based around Buddhism, but also around breaking free. But I remember a book by Christmas Humphreys. He was a British judge, and he was also the head of the British Buddhist Society, I think it was, and wrote a number of books. But he wrote a book called Buddhism, and I resonated very much with the chapter on Tibetan Buddhism and the chapter on Zen. They both appealed to me for very different reasons, because Zen was very spare and elegant, and Tibetan Buddhism was very rich and complicated, but seemed to be very wise. And, of course, in later years, I was able to go to Tibet and see that firsthand, and to go to Japan and go to various Zen monasteries during my time exploring spirituality. So those areas of endeavor appealed to me. I was actually in Tehran on my way to India, and I'd heard about the Tao Te Ching, but hadn't really delved into it. But one of the people I was staying with in Tehran had a copy that they'd handwritten, actually. It was a handwritten copy, and I spent days ingesting that and being very moved by it. So the Tao Te Ching has always been a book that's inspired me, and I still use it regularly today. But, you know, going to India, yeah, where you're confronted with all the multiplicity of gods and stories and mythology, and yet the perennial philosophy, you know, the eternal truth at the heart of the Indian experience is still extremely meaningful to me today. I kind of oscillate or go back from if I'm too involved in the adamantine simplicities and elegance of Zen or Buddhism, then I have to rush back into the messiness of Hinduism, you know. So I have to embrace both, and I think that's the wonderful thing about eclectic understanding is, you know, you're not limited by one view. Sometimes you want to go into that Zen-like space. Other times you want to be involved with the extreme complicated and yet rich spirituality of Indian temple worship, you know, where the pujaris go on chanting and lifting up various substances to the gods and pouring, you know, the yogurt and oil over statues and everything. It's fascinating. And then if you had enough of that, you go back to, you know, something simple again. So it's I think that's the wonderful diversity here, is that, you know, everything is relevant.
Okay, so here we have this cornucopia of religions and various ways of looking at spirituality that you're experiencing, and with all of that colorful richness that you have there, you went to Unity.
And
I love your story about when you first noted Unity at the little fair. You want to tell that story and tell why you were attracted to Unity?
Yeah, we were just coming back from India, and I'd been there, I don't know, several months, maybe a year. And we came back and went to the Festival of Body, Mind, and Spirit at Earl's Court in London. It was a big fair, actually. And there was a booth that was run by the Rajneeshis, who is now called Osho, but a very influential guru of the 60s and 70s. And it was all full of orange-robed people and very similar to, you know, what I'd seen in India. And I was initially attracted to it, but it seemed chaotic. And right next door, there was the opposite of chaos, a very quiet little white stall with just a line of books and a little old lady sitting at the back. And it was the antithesis of the Rajneesh, you know, stall with all its razzmatazz and entertainment. But there was something, and I guess it speaks to that, you know, going back and forth between the two. But it speaks to the stillness that I felt there, and I wanted to explore that more. And I was delighted, actually, to find in Unity that the fact that you had, you know, deep spiritual principles based in Jesus, but they also embodied, as Charles and Myrtle did, they embodied other religious understandings and in a sort of eclectic mix without losing sight of the core vision of Jesus, you know, and his amazing demonstration. So, because I've always had seen the difference between the religion of Jesus, you know, and the religion about Jesus. I think they've done things in the name of Jesus over the centuries that have nothing to do with what his real teachings were. And I love Unity because I think it gets back to the true principles. I think Fillmore Charles Fillmore called it primitive Christianity, or might call it original Christianity, you know, before it became Christian. You know, we were followers of the way, and I like that, that unity is a way of living. It follows the way of this inner divinity, and that really excited me. So unity's always provided that. You know, it's it may seem a little plain sometimes, but it has depths and solidity to it, and an embrace to it that is very satisfying for me, and I think it's important in our world.
Mm-hmm. Well, you preach practical spirituality with practical lessons that help people so that they're not just coming for a Sunday, blah, 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 but a whole thought that they can take with them and practice throughout the week and
yes.
be reminded again and again. And so then it becomes like refueling coming to Unity Church of Fort Worth, at least. And,
yeah.
and you know, I think
so.
That you're appreciated for that.
Right.
And I think that, you know, you're telling us why you chose Unity, because it was diverse like that. But what satisfies you about being a Unity minister?
Well, that's a good
what
question.
What do you find satisfying?
Yeah, let's hold that thought, because I think we need to let's go to the break right now.
Okay.
But, I promise I'll answer it when we get back, and we're going to listen to these messages from Unity for about 2 minutes, and then we'll be back.
Wouldn't you like to share the programs that inspire you most with audiences around the world? That's easier than ever with mobile giving. Just text Unity Radio to 72727 and help us continue offering spiritual programs that change lives.
In his new book, What If Godzilla Just Wanted a Hug?, Daryl Fusaro emphasizes the positive effects of applying Unity principles in everyday situations. Laura Harvey, editor of Daily Word magazine, exclaims, "Daryl Fusaro shares his life lessons with inspiring creativity. This book is encouraging, funny, and heartwarming, a combination I highly recommend." As co-host of Unity Online Radio's Funniest Thing with Daryl and Ed, Daryl's old-school charm and no-nonsense approach to spirituality keep a global audience laughing and inspired. What If Godzilla Just Wanted a Hug? Is loaded with Daryl's hilarious, award-winning illustrations and packs his wit and wisdom into easy-to-digest, bite-sized stories of how he transforms chaos into tranquility and succeeds in the entertainment business by doing the opposite of everyone else. What If Godzilla Just Wanted a Hug is a pocket Bible encouraging the talented and timid to trust their gut, act on their intuition, and step out boldly. Even if you just bought it for the chapter titles and Daryl Fusaro's illustrations alone, you'd be getting more than your money's worth with this book. Author and film critic Sister Rose Bucati says, "Spending time with Fusaro's stories will leave you no choice but to smile and carry on." Oh, he forgot to mention he hangs out with a group of nuns, but then, if he had, it would have necessitated a change to some of his more colorful adjectives. Have fun ordering your copy of What If Godzilla Just Wanted a Hug today on Amazon.com.
I will leave this world as it is.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find my God.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
So, hello. Welcome back. You're listening to World Spirituality on Unity Online Radio Network. I am Wendy Roach, and I am interviewing Paul John Roach as we complete a series of a five-week series asking Unity ministers about their spiritual lives and their paths. So before the break, we started to I started to ask Paul what satisfies him about Unity. He's been a Unity minister for almost 30 years and in Unity for almost 40. So there's got to be something fascinating that keeps him going in the Unity principle. So what would that be for you?
Yeah, that's a good question, isn't it? Because, you know, when you're involved in an organization and you tend to see all the downside to it, you know, and all the politics and the ups and downs of how it unfolds, but essentially I'm still excited about the core message, you know, that Charles and Myrtle Fillmore did bring an amazing message to the world. And it's not a new message, of course, and both of them admitted that. It's the perennial philosophy. But I think what's remarkable about Unity and other New Thought teachings is that these wonderful principles of truth are laid out in a very clear and open-minded way that allows for a lot of things. You know, you've got the core principles, but then you've got this basket of complementary ways, tools, techniques, understanding that you could teach and still be called a Unity church or a Unity minister. And that's very valuable to me because, you know, many denominations have a rule book, they have a dogma, a doctrine, and that's the only thing they can teach then. And we don't have a rule book in Unity. We don't have doctrine or dogma as such. So it gives us an incredible flexibility. Some people say, oh, well, you can believe anything you want there. And maybe we can, but I think that misses the point because we do have a core in the key principles of Unity. But it's expansive. You know, it embraces. If there's any other system in the world that's like this, I think it would be Hinduism itself, because Hinduism embraces everything. You know, it takes in Jesus and the Buddha, who they see as great prophets. It allows for a diversity of understanding and a diversity of belief. So that's part of the power of Unity for me. And yet, you know, the other side of it is it's grounded in Jesus and the teachings of the Christ. And to me, that is wonderful because Jesus is the great way shower who clearly laid out a template for all of us to live by. And if there's any other great way shower on this planet, for me, it would be the Buddha because, you know, if the Buddha is for the East, Jesus is for the West. And now in our modern world where we're a global village, there's a blend of both, and so,
and if you believe that we're all one, then they are both one.
Absolutely,
spirit
absolutely.
Also,
absolutely.
Which brings me to a backtracking a little bit in your spiritual experience to wondering if you wanted to talk a little bit about your influence from visiting Scandivale and being a part of that. Community, since that's a community that embraces all.
Yeah, that's true. And Wendy's referring to the community of the many names of God. It's sometimes called Scandivale. It was founded back in the 70s by a person from Sri Lanka who had grown up both Buddhist and Hindu. And I think his mother was Hindu and his dad was Buddhist. And he moved to London and then out to Wales and established this ashram in the countryside of West Wales called Scandivale. It's when I started going there, it was just a few years old, and they just had a couple of acres and one farmhouse, and now it's grown to several hundred acres and several farmhouses. And they had one temple, and now there's three, one dedicated to Lord Subramaniam, the son of Shiva, and one to Mahashakti, the mother, and then one to Sri Ranganath, which is an aspect of Vishnu. And so it attracts thousands of tourists, or devotees, I should say, from various places in Britain, especially Indians, because it's based in Hinduism. But it embraces all, so it has Buddhist and Christian prayers, and I found it very, very inspiring when I was coming back from India and started being involved there. And the guru, the leader, the founder, died a few years ago, and now the monks lead this ashram, and it's just a beautiful place to visit. You know, they have ceremonies about six or seven times a day in the various temples without ceasing. They're praying and chanting. They do a lot of temple worship chants, and this goes on. Plus they run a organic farm, and they have all kinds of animals and grow crops and welcome everybody, and nobody's charged anything. It's totally free. They also have a hospice, and my daughter Miriam actually was blessed there when she was born, and then she was blessed there again when she got married, and her first child was blessed there. So I was blessed there. So it's been a place of extreme importance for me for many years. And what I love about it is, you know, like you said, it's embracing. You know, it may be based in Hinduism, but it embraces all aspects of spirituality. And that's really where I'm coming from, I guess. So if you're ever in Wales, check it out. It's about 12 miles north of Carmarthen, and it's called Scandavale, or the Community of the Many Names of God. Very beautiful place, very peaceful. You get peace restored to your soul if you go there.
So what would you say would be the one thing that you took back from Scandavale that has, as you have such an eclectic mix of different things going on here for you, what was the one thing you took from Scandavale?
Well, you know, it comes back to the natural world again. You know, I've always been a nature mystic. So the fact that this ashram is nestled in this beautiful wooded valley, and they honor nature and they're looking after it, and it's a Royal Society of Protection of Birds habitat and things like that, that speaks to me. But I also like the discipline. You know, I'm not a hugely disciplined person myself, though I do get my work done. But I do admire the extreme discipline that they have, you know, to get up at 5 in the morning and conduct their first service. And then the last one, you know, finishes at 10 at night. And so that discipline is very attractive to me. But also the richness of the life, you know, the dedication to these chosen forms of God, and lifting up that spirit within. They're symbolized in the outer by the images, but they represent qualities within our own consciousness. So it's a metaphysical understanding. And again, that excites me. And, you know, you mentioned earlier about, you know, the excitement of interpreting the Bible or any other religious book from a metaphysical point of view. You know, it's not about something that happened in the past. It's about how we relate to our own inner truth today. And when you can see the Bible that way, or when you see a statue and understand that it represents aspects of you, then it becomes totally different. You know, it becomes very, very exciting indeed, because you realize everything's alive. Again, coming back to that, I'm alive. Everything's alive with meaning and possibility. And that for me is very, very powerful and sustaining. So, you know, when I think about Scandavale, I get inspired, you know, just by thinking about it. So I think that's, you know, if we can get that with our religion or our spirituality, then we're connecting to something deeper than just ordinary everyday reality. And then we need that, you know. We're not checking out from ordinary everyday reality. We're bringing greater meaning into their ordinary everyday reality.
Well, segue into a little bit about your practice today. How you practice for your own self? What do you do and for your own
right.
self?
Yeah, you know, I like to think that life itself is a meditation. You know, and you don't always have to sit in meditation pose to meditate. That you eventually you it becomes a part of your day. And for many decades now, I've used a couple of mantras, particularly that are meaningful to me, that I take with me through my day. One is Christian based, one's Hindu based, but I find that they speak to the same divinity. But I use that a lot because it grounds me, it helps me remember. And I think that's what it's all about, you know, it's remembering who you are. We forget sometimes, and so we need remembrances. I think that's what they call it in Sufism, actually. You know, the practice of chant is the practice of remembrance. I remember the truth of who I am. And so that's a huge part of my practice. And the other big thing I'm working on right now is trusting the divine order of everything. You know, we live in a crazy world sometimes, and we can be overwhelmed by it. But I think we have to remember everything is unfolding in the right and perfect way, and that God's in charge, and trusting that and cooperating with it and being a compassionate part of that is hugely important. So I'm spending more and more time, you know, working on what that means and encouraging our congregation to live from that context too, to remember who we are and live from love, you know, live from the essence of who we are in truth. So when we can do that, we're ennobled, I think. I have an altar in my room, my study at home, which has Hindu.
It's just as eclectic as your experiences.
Yeah. it has a Hindu shelf, and a Buddhist shelf, a Christian shelf, yeah. Different images, you know, Shiva and Nataraj and the Buddha and some of the mm-hmm. saints and, that have influenced me in my life. So, yeah, I find it, you know, very comforting to look at it and to meditate on it and sometimes to bring the some of the images out so that it can be with me. You know, I was writing an article for the Unity Leaders Journal recently, and I brought out Shiva Nataraj to put in front of me just as an inspiration, you know, and sometimes they can act like that. You're not really thinking about it too much, but there it is, you know, a reminder that that's all's well. That there's an order to the universe you can trust. So
I think one of the other things you do in your practice is, like you were saying, that nature had a great influence on you, and that you reap stillness there and find peace in nature. And you take time to walk in nature often. And I think that sometimes when I hear you're troubled about some issues or whatever going on, that the next thing I know you'll say, oh, I had a walk in the botanical gardens today. And it's like almost a cleansing for you, but I think that's another thing that I see you do a lot, is you bring nature in that way by going and finding order again in the world.
And you know, I'm a big advocate of the truth that nature is everywhere. You know, we tend to think, oh, well, you know, I can't get to Yosemite or Yellowstone or one of the wonderful national parks that we have in this country, and there are many. But I think nature shows up in even the most unlikely of places, you know, and to appreciate that is important, because, you know, otherwise we're just despoiling everything and just keeping a few places nice and pristine, and then the rest is up for grabs. But so I think it's important to celebrate parts of our city that are preserved. You know, we, like you mentioned, we have the Botanic Gardens, we have the Tandy Hills, which is a prairie land that's diverse with all kinds of species and very close to downtown. So these places are lungs and inspiring sanctuaries, if you like. So that's important to me. But just you know, enjoying a flower that may be growing in your backyard or a tree, these things could inspire us, I think. So, you know, I like to take pictures of nature and put them on Facebook, because it could be inspirational for others as well. So that's important to me.
And your love of nature and your understanding of it comes through in the beautiful pictures that you take. You're quite an awesome photographer.
Yeah, I never thought I'd be called that, but it's amazing what the iPhone can do these days. Yeah, but I did take the leap and get a camera for my birthday, and we'll see what I can do with that. I still haven't really got to it. I'm just still doing the iPhone, but maybe I'll shift over one of these days.
So one of the other things I know in your practice that you have that. I think you not only preach this, but you do yourself, is that you have affirmations around you. And peace be still is one that comes to my mind. It, I think you have it on a note card in your office, and we have it on our utility, above our utility room sink. And when we were at Gambo Abbey not too long ago, you pulled it out of your wallet and had that affirmation in your wallet, and we left it at the Abbey and as a calling card. But I've seen you use other affirmations to sort of keep yourself centered, as well as when I'm running around hectic and you tell me that there's time enough and energy enough to do all the things that are mine to do, and it just settles me so much to hear you say those things. But anyways, you use affirmations in your practice.
Right, and I think that's one of the wonderful things about Unity, actually, is that we have some amazing affirmations. You know, some were created by Charles and Myrtle back in the day, some by other Unity teachers. Some we see now as sort of a lodestone, a core of a treasure, if you like, of what we have in Unity. And sometimes they can be as simple as let go and let God. And one of my favorites is, I am centered and poised in the Christ spirit, and nothing can disturb the calm peace of my soul. Every time I say that, you know, I get calm and relaxed, and I remember again who I am, and nothing has the power to disturb me. So, yeah, we have a wonderful treasure house of affirmation in Unity. I don't think you could just rely on affirmation, you know, because if you just slap an affirmation on everything, it's not going to make everything right. But I think to use it effectively in prayer and meditations mindfully, it can have a very salutary effect. Yeah, the Be Still and Know actually was given to me and all the board members at Unity World Headquarters by Silent Unity, a little card that said, Be Still and Know. And I had it in my pocket and wanted to leave it there at Gambo Abbey when we were there in Nova Scotia. And it seemed like a fitting thing to put there, a little message from Unity. But that's such a wonderful affirmation from the Bible, you know, from Psalm 46, Be Still and Know that I am God. And you can contemplate that one for a while and go into that peaceful place, that still point within. You know, I wanted to share, too, that there's been a number of teachers that have influenced me in my life, and we've all had different ones that have been important to us. But there's just a few, really, that are head and shoulders above everyone else that I always go back to. And one of them is Marcus Aurelius, because I find his Stoic philosophy so inspirational and cuts through all the nonsense to the core of things, you know, and a wonderful, wonderful teacher. But I like, you know, many of the Hindu teachers like Ramana Maharshi and Sri Ramakrishna. And another gem is Sri Nagasadatan Maharaj, who had the book of his talks transcribed. It's called I Am That, lived in Bombay back in the 60s and 70s. Wonderful teachers. And I also like some Zen teachers, Dogen, from the East and from the West. Of course, my favorite mystic of all time is Meister Eckhart, and he combined so many deeper understanding that if you're a Buddhist, you think Meister Eckhart's a Buddhist. If you're a Hindu, you think he's a Hindu. And the truth is, he was unity. You know, he understood the oneness of everything. But I highly recommend Meister Eckhart if you want some amazing out-of-the-box thinking. And it's so modern that you can't believe that he was writing this in the 13th and 14th centuries. So wonderful stuff. And ongoing inspirations in my practice is to read these materials, because they're endlessly inspirational.
Your eyes light up, and your whole energy becomes, your whole body becomes energized when you read from these people and you are sharing from it.
Right. You're right. Yeah, because you feel like you could have written it yourself almost. You know, it resonates so deeply mm-hmm. within us. I think we've all come across writers like that. You think, yeah, that is totally the truth. You know, I that's where I'm from. That's what I don't have the skill maybe to articulate it as well as these do, but I'm glad they did, because I can resonate with it very deeply. The other inspiration I think is the Upanishads, because I think the Upanishads of ancient India are probably the most profound spiritual literature that's ever been written. And it's free of all the judgment that you find in some of the Old Testament writings or some other writings. It just is, talk about nobility. It's a noble presentation of the truth. So I always go back to the Upanishads, because the Bhagavad Gita is part of that. Go back to those texts if I want real deep inspiration. So it's another, so rich, you know, we have so many things to mine in our world, you know, from the Tao Te Ching to the Gita to you know, some of the teachings in the Bible, the Gospels, certainly the Psalms, the Book of Job. There's so many gems that can inspire us.
So, you know, all of the people that you just named out as being influential to you, you'd almost think that Jesus sort of sounds used up and boring. Like you said before, what's been heaped on him hasn't done his image much good, that it was what he was doing himself and being an example. But why did you keep Jesus in your world? You were exposed to all of these different things, and what made you keep Jesus in your world? By the way, yeah. I just want to say that on your altar, it's the laughing Jesus on your altar.
Yeah,
but what keeps
right.
Jesus in your world?
I guess because he's the man, you know. I mean, there were no. My late wife used to say, "There's no flies on Jesus," and it's because he was so. He was like a Zen master. He cut through to the truth of things, his understanding of spirituality was so beautifully presented in a few words. You know, he didn't have to go on and on and on. But I think no one in the world, in world history, I admire the Buddha, but I think even more than the Buddha, Jesus was able to not only have a wonderful body of teachings, but he embodied those teachings. You know, he demonstrated them. He even unto death. And that is an enormous inspiration, I think. And who couldn't say that? That you did everything you could, anything you were asked to do by God, to demonstrate this in a very visceral way. And so I think that's why so many Christians, you know, get tearful thinking about that, and why they have images of the crucifixion. It's because of that ultimate sacrifice is so moving. I like to talk about the resurrected Christ more than the Christ on the cross, but I can understand that it is a moving thing that person would lay down their lives for us in that way. But of course, that's only half the story, right? The real story is that we have victory over lack and limitation, including death, and that's the truth of the ages. And yeah, Jesus demonstrated it, but he calls us to do the same. So, endlessly enlightening for me to read the Gospels and, you know, go back to the teachings of Jesus. It doesn't matter how many times you've read them, you read those stories and there it is again. You know, wow, this is awesome stuff. Just wonderful. Just wonderful.
Mm. So, tell us a little bit about what it's like to be a minister.
Terrible.
Oh, come now.
Well, you know, it was funny. I think it was...
All jobs have their ups and downs now.
I think it was Foster McClellan, the minister who's in charge of the overseas department when I first came into ministry. He says, if you can do anything else at all in your life, I want you to really think about this, Paul. If you could do anything at all other than be a minister, do it. Because ministry, you know, is a very difficult thing to do. And he was right, of course. You know, it's very difficult because, you know, you are in a very vulnerable position, you know, teaching these profound but vulnerable truths. You know, you make yourself vulnerable. And they're vulnerable because they can be interpreted and misinterpreted in so many ways. So you're opening yourself up for a lot of grief. Also, you're dealing with people who are searching and struggling, and sometimes, you know, it's like a spiritual hospital, and they turn on the one that tries to help them. And so
they,
it can
project.
They project. Yeah. And so it can become a tough road to hoe in that regard. Now, the other side of it is, it's probably the best thing that has ever happened to me, because I've got so much joy and wonder and connectedness with people and the ability to share these wonderful truths. So it's a knife edge, I guess, between the two. So, yeah, I don't regret it. I'm glad I became a minister. I think it was God calling, and it is a calling, I think. If you're not called, don't do it. You know, I think that was what Foster was saying. But once you are called, then it becomes, even in spite of all the difficulties, it becomes the most magnificent thing. So I feel very humbled to be a minister. You know, a minister is someone who serves others. And that's a wonderful thing, to be able to serve others. I think nurses and doctors and other caregivers are in that same place. You know, they're in the position of serving, and you receive so much when you do that.
Yes, and you, I'm sorry, I'm impartial. Maybe not. I think you're doing an awesome job of it, and I've seeing you put your talents to work, and I say thank you for sharing those talents with us.
Yeah, you might be a little biased. Yeah, that's okay. I'm glad you are.
I knew you was a minister before I married you, so, and I thought you were great then too. So,
oh, that's sweet. That's sweet.
But one of the other ways that you've put your talent to work is you've been involved in Unity itself and the movement as a whole, and something that you've turned around and dedicated your time and your talent back to the movement in order to keep it going. And it today is I guess every day it's at a choice point, but it is a time that you're involved with it. So you want to tell us a little bit about Unity today? And
yeah, we're pretty much out of time, but just briefly, I think, like you say, it's always at a choice point, but I think a lot of shifts in our world, and many people are teaching the Unity message now. So it's, how do we make ourselves relevant in the midst of that? And, you know, we have so much to offer. And I'm excited about some of the moves that are being made right now. We have a new CEO of Unity, Jim Blake, and I think he's going to be excellent. There's moves to bring the Unity Worldwide Ministries back to the Unity Village headquarters. I think that's a good move. I think we need to come together in unity and not be afraid to teach this wonderful message, you know, and to go deep with it too, because I think I see all kinds of new initiatives coming from the village. I think the social media and all that's involved with technology is going to really help, because I think we need to bring this message to a wider world in all kinds of ways. So I'm excited about that. I think there's a lot of life in Unity. We have yet to codify ourselves, and so that's a gift. You know, we're still at the cutting edge. We can go any direction we want, but we have this core of the Unity teachings. Wendy, I want to thank you for guiding us through this and getting me to talk. So thank you.
You're quite welcome. Unity is timeless.
Yes.
Its teachings are timeless.
That's absolutely true. Yeah, it's the perennial philosophy. Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Folks, next week I'll be discussing the nature of Shiva Shakti, the great Hindu understanding of integration, based on the god Shiva and his consort Parvati, or Shakti. So we'll talk about the integration of male and female, of god and goddess, within our own beings, based on these wonderful stories and teachings from India. So join me again next week for that. And once again, I want to thank Wendy for being an excellent interviewer. It's a new career, maybe.
I think I need to get back to work now.
Okay. Thanks, folks. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next
thank
week.
You. All right.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
At Metaphysical Romp 2, we demystify metaphysics to help you live life at a deeper level. One of our key principles is the recognition that you always have the power to choose how you respond to any situation. Instead of asking, why did this happen to me? A better practice, which aligns with the metaphysical principles we share, is to ask yourself the question, how can I use this for good? We promise you'll experience a transformation in thinking that will reap huge dividends as you master the art of living metaphysically. For new perspective and spiritual insight, listen to Metaphysical Romp 2 with co-hosts Reverend Paul Hasselbeck, Reverend Bill Holton, and Reverend Cher Holton. Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Central Time here on Unity Online Radio.
Sometimes when we think we love someone, we're actually loving what we think the other person may be able to give us. Love at its highest level demands nothing in return. Love is much more than an emotion. It is an inner quality that sees good everywhere and in everybody. It insists that all is good, and by refusing to see anything but good, it tends to cause that quality to appear uppermost in itself and in other things. Ask yourself, what kind of love am I radiating? Do I love with no concern about what I'll receive in return? Make the choice to love unconditionally, purely for the sake of loving. You'll become a healing, harmonizing influence on everyone and everything in your world. This message has been brought to you by the Association of Unity Churches International. To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
Benefits of spiritually conscious living start now. For a time-tested method to live with purpose and release your infinite potential, tune in to the Yoga Hour, Living the Eternal Way, with Yogacharya Ellen Grace O'Brien, every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Pacific, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity. the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.